counsel.
May it please the court, Consuela Woodhead on behalf of the United States. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time, and I will keep an eye on the clock.
Thank you.
The safety valve statute itself, coupled with well-established law that defendant bears the burden of proving his eligibility for safety valve relief, resolves this appeal. The safety valve applies only if two conditions are met. First, the defendant shows by a preponderance that he has truthfully provided all to the government all information and evidence he has concerning the offense or offenses that were part of the common course of conduct or scheme. And two, the district court makes a finding that defendant has done that. These two statutory requirements apply regardless of what the government already knows and regardless of the simplicity of the offense. That's in this court's Shrestha decision. Neither of these two requirements was met here. First, as to the disclosure requirement, which is commonly referred to as the proffer requirement, and I use that term, as I think the case law does, as a shorthand for that standard.
What did New York call it? The queen for a day rule?
The queen for, it can be called that. That's more commonly used in my experience.
Term, right?
In connection with someone making a proffer prior to making a plea, as opposed to a safety valve proffer. And it usually is associated with an agreement that the government won't use the information, which is really not a consideration one way or the other in the safety valve context. But it's basically a requirement that there's something out there that purports to represent all the information and evidence that the defendant has.
It doesn't say that, does it?
Pardon?
It doesn't say that there has to be a formal proffer.
There does not have to.
That's actually
what I was going to suggest. I'm not saying that there has to be a, quote, formal proffer or a proffer in any specific form. But the term I'm saying is generally used to refer as a shorthand for the statutory requirement, that there is something that constitutes a disclosure of all information and evidence.
And I take it the only thing we have in the record here is what defense counsel said in the sentencing memo.
That is correct, and that is there is essentially nothing in there. There's nothing in there that comes close to meeting the standard of a truthful and complete disclosure.
And the district court offered a continuance, did it not, if Mr. Salazar was willing to sit down with his lawyer and perhaps make a proffer through the lawyer, subject to the government's ability to follow up with any questions?
That is correct.
Salazar declined.
And he declined. I mean, it was pretty clear from the record he didn't want even a written proffer with his name on it that named names and made the kind of disclosure that would constitute a truthful and complete disclosure. He declined that opportunity.
The district court seemed to indicate that making a proffer in this situation would be futile. He says, I don't know what else the proffer is going to accomplish. Is there any futility exception to the requirement?
There absolutely is no futility exception to the requirement. If the defendant must make the complete and truthful disclosure, if in fact it doesn't help the government at all, that's fine. The statute says he still qualifies.
This is a formality. Is that what you're saying? Because the district court did make a finding that there was nothing else that he could provide, meaning that he had provided everything. They knew everything. He pleaded guilty, and he offered to make a written statement, as I understand it.
He did not offer.
He offered to write a letter, I guess.
He offered, but then he did not follow through on the offer, and he never submitted that. And then he never followed through, and one of the cases he cites, Milquitas, says just offering to make a complete and truthful disclosure isn't enough. You must actually make a complete and truthful disclosure prior to the hearing.
Well, I thought there was some indication he was told that that wouldn't be good enough.
Whether it's good enough for the government to make a recommendation or not is not the issue under the statute. Under the statute, he has to go ahead and do it. If he does not make a complete and truthful disclosure, he has not met the statutory standard. Whether the government then recommends or not is not the point.
Counsel, how would the district court be in a position to know that it would be futile? As I understand it, the government had been conducting a fairly comprehensive investigation of drug smuggling into the Los Angeles County jail system, and I didn't see anything in the record that established what the government knew and when they knew it. So how could the district court decide that it was futile if he didn't know what the government knew?
The district court could not decide it was futile. I think you're right on that. There was no basis for the district court to decide it was futile. There was no basis in the record here for the court to say the defendant had made a complete and truthful disclosure.
There
was no body of facts that the defendant pointed to and said, here, this is all I know.
The district court seemed to indicate that Judge Wu knew he was kind of out on a limb here. I think he actually at one point invited an appeal or said he expected one because of the ruling, to the extent he made a ruling, that he was...
I think that's exactly right. That the central argument the defendant made was, I don't have to meet the complete and truthful disclosure requirement of the statute, because if I did, it wouldn't give the government anything it doesn't already know. And that seems to be that's the argument that the court accepted. Not that the defendant had in fact made a complete and truthful disclosure, because you will search in vain in this record for something that constitutes that, but that the defendant didn't have to, because it appeared to the court that his participation in this conspiracy was so limited that the government wouldn't get any new information.
There's no indication on this record that he knew more than he was telling, is there?
Pardon?
There's no indication in this record that there was any more to the incident than what he was telling, or what
oh,
was,
I, I,
was
I think the there is certainly indication in the record that he had not, that he did not meet the tell all you can tell requirement. He himself, he never identified whether who he got the drugs from. He never said that. The name Amaya, he never gave. And that is part of the, it's called, as this court has called it, a tell all you can tell requirement.
Well, this happened in the jail.
It happened in the jail, correct.
As I understood it, his cellmate basically had engaged in conduct so that he got arrested with somehow the contraband secreted on his person that he successfully smuggled into the jail, but then the deputies were tossing the cell, and somehow Mr. Salazar ended up holding the contraband.
It was not his cellmate. It was someone in a different cell. And what Your Honor just stated is part of the unknown, which a truthful and complete disclosure would have to disclose. Exactly how did it end up in defendant's hands? Did he get it directly from Mr. Amaya or from Mr. Maya's cell, or did he get it through a third person? That is not in the record.
Did you want to save time?
I would like to reserve the rest of my time.
Good morning, Your Honors. David Zugman on behalf of Martin Salazar. May it please the court. It's good to be the appellee. There's a lot of advantages to being the appellee, and one of those is that...
Unaccustomed as you are.
Very unaccustomed, but I do like the fact that you can... What we're doing is seeing if there is a basis in the evidence for Judge Wu's finding, right? That's the rule...
What evidence did Judge Wu have before him?
Judge, I don't normally engage in this sort of thing, but I mean, if...
What, answering questions from the bench?
I duck those.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it.
Well, here's what I would say, though. Like, if, say, one of your honors had prescription meds and it fell on the floor and I grabbed it and tried to take it for myself, the whole crime the whole thing, my attempted possession of a drug that I'm not allowed to have, would happen entirely in front of you. And in that circumstance, there would be nothing more for me to talk about. I wouldn't have any further indication because it was a
What about the question that counsel just ended with? Who'd he get the drug from?
Well, that presumes that he knows who he got the drugs from.
Well, but so, without asking him, how can anyone know?
So I think putting it in Judge Wu's perspective, Your Honor, this is a wiretap case inside of a prison where we know for certain that Mr. Salazar is not a member of the Mexican Mafia because the government has indicted 68 other people who were members of the Mexican Mafia, talked to many, many of them, had every chance to ask about Mr. Salazar. And in Mr. Salazar's 37 criminal history points, were he an associate of the Mexican Mafia, that would be something that would be clear to everyone. All of Your Honors have had Mexican Mafia cases. By my count, there are almost 1,500 Mexican Mafia cases reported in the circuits. We know that Mr. Salazar did not have any previous relationship. We also know
but
that
Judge
Wu... But
the Mexican Mafia is not the only entity that engages in smuggling contraband into detention facilities.
Certainly true, Your Honor. But in this instance, when we're asking about what Judge Wu knew and how Judge Wu made his finding, it is a Mexican Mafia case, which the docket, as it currently stands, has over 3,000 entries. And he's
So Judge Wu's finding was not that a proffer had been made. In fact, he expressly did not make such a finding. His finding seems to be that a proffer here would be futile. I don't know what else the proffer is going to accomplish. In fact, the court asked Mr. Rexrode, Mr. Salazar's counsel, will your client offer a proffer? And Mr. Rexrode said, no, sir. So we know that the court didn't find there was a proffer. What the court found was it would be futile or wasn't necessary. So don't we have to determine whether Judge Wu's determination that you don't have to make a proffer if it would be futile complies sufficiently with the statute?
To comply with the statute, Mr. Salazar must provide the government with information about his offense and any relevant conduct. It is the position of Mr. Salazar that this was a spontaneous action. That is what Judge Wu found. Judge Wu says that. That's the whole fumbled ball, that there was no planning before it. He just jumped on it, and he's caught.
That all comes out of the sentencing memo. That's not evidence.
Well, it's in the plea agreement, too, and the plea agreement contains this provision called the factual basis in which he describes what happens, and that information
is... But the plea agreement expressly says it doesn't include all of the facts.
It may say that as a tagline, but...
Well, your client signed off on that document when he signed the plea agreement, did he not?
Oh, certainly true, Your Honor, but at this stage of the proceedings, at no point has the government said what question about relevant conduct they would have asked Mr. Salazar that they weren't able to.
Well, we just heard one. And I believe that's in the record. We want to know who he got the drugs from.
That presumes that he knows who he got the drugs from.
Asking him the question, how can you know the answer?
When Judge Wu is assessing the facts in front of him, and he assesses
what
the facts...
What facts? It seems to me that the court was essentially accepting the arguments of counsel in the sentencing memo as if it was a proffer of facts, and that's not evidence that is admissible to support a finding. So if we can't rely on that, what else is there?
Well, I think, Your Honor, I would point to the Sherpa case that I 28J'd, and it should have been included in the brief, and I apologize for that. But in Sherpa, there was no proffer. It was the trial testimony of the defendant. There was no formality, and the government opposed.
Well, trial testimony is certainly evidence, is it not? Subject to cross-examination?
Well, then we're
just considerate in rendering factual determination.
It's just more evidence. It doesn't mean that the plea agreement is not evidence. In fact, the plea agreement is essentially a statement under oath, just like you'd be giving as you were in the witness box. You're saying this is what happened.
But
this
it's
is what
not
I
all the evidence. That's the concern I have. And the government was essentially saying, without the ability to follow up and ask more questions here, we don't know whether Mr. Salazar has told us everything he knows.
Well, I think, though, that's where the fact that this is an appellee's brief, that what we're looking at is, was there enough evidence for Judge Wu to make the finding, and that's the rule.
But the finding, again, is not that he made a proffer. So that gets back to my question. The district court never found that Mr. Salazar made a proffer for purposes of the safety valve reduction. Instead, he said a proffer would be futile. So my question to you was, is that enough to comply with the statute, and why?
So my answer to that question is that Judge Wu's finding is an implicit finding that we have at sentencing hearings all the time, where a judge hears arguments on two sides and then says, you know what, I'm going to rule in favor of one side or the other, and the reviewing court assumes that the judge made the factual findings that justified the outcome.
Isn't the normal procedure for the government to make a 5K1 motion based on the proffer that the defendant has made or the cooperation that he has given the government?
Well, this
there,
is not,
there wasn't anything like that here.
That's completely correct, Your Honor. However, this was an anomalous situation where I've been practicing for 25 years. I've never seen anything like it, where we have someone who comes in and just jumps on some drugs and then shoves them in his body to help someone else try to hide him from
the
guards.
Well, that's the argument of counsel, but the record is pretty skimpy to support that conclusion without asking a few more questions.
Certainly, always you can imagine another question you could ask. However, in this instance, the government would be asking questions about hypotheticals, about what would you have done had you been successful, which, as far as I can tell, there's no indication that Mr. Salazar thought this thing through even a little bit, that it was just a spontaneous action. That's what the judge found, and if that's correct...
And what's his motive for doing it? To curry favor with the Mexican mafia?
We
don't know.
And it assumes that there is a motive, right? I mean, the Judge Wu's finding
He must have had a reason for possessing them, unless his argument now is, I had them, but I didn't know they were in my possession. I don't think he can make that argument, given his plea.
Your Honor, having represented thousands of criminal defendants, asking them why they did, almost they rarely know the exact answer as to why they did it. And sometimes it was just, I'm a person who has 37...
The whole purpose of the statute is to put the onus on the defendant to come clean with whatever it is that he knows. And Mr. Salazar didn't do that here.
Well, but the second part of this of the statute is that the fact that the defendant has no relevant or useful other information to provide, or that the government is already aware of the information, shall not preclude a determination by the court the defendant has complied with the proper requirement. So I take it your position is that the district court found essentially that there was no further information that would be helpful, and so therefore he's complied with the statute.
That's exactly correct.
So the district court expressly said that the proffer wasn't sufficient. The government is the arbiter of whether or not there has been a sufficient proffer. So I didn't see anything in the transcript indicating the court making a finding that Salazar had made a sufficient proffer. All he said was it would be, I don't know what else the proffer is going to accomplish. So your position seems to be that the district court implicitly found that the proffer was sufficient?
No,
despite the plain language? Then what are you saying?
Your Honor, I would refer, Your Honor, to ER page 33, where the court says, I would indicate for the record that I view it, this is when he's talking about the government saying he violated acceptance of responsibility. He says, although obviously he is a part of the conspiracy, a conspiracy because he is doing this for the benefit, in other words, to ingratiate himself with members of the Mexican mafia that are operating in these jail facilities, and that, again, just so the quixotic nature of this particular crime here is such that I think it is not in any way, shape, or form a normal type of involvement in the operations of the Mexican mafia by this particular individual. So I really view this as an anomalous type of situation, and it really is. The thing we know about the Mexican mafia is we know who's in the Mexican mafia. It's a very exclusive club, and Mr. Salazar is not in it. He did not have any business with these people, and it was caught. So they're really, this is the hypothetical where somebody drops their drugs and they jump on it. There just was nothing more here. I see my time has elapsed. thank you for entertaining the argument. If there are no further questions, of course.
Apparently not. Thank you for your argument.
First, under the statute and under this court's law in Shrestha, it is a two-step process. The defendant must first make a complete and truthful disclosure to qualify. If he has done that, the fact that it did not add to the information the government has is not held against him. But the defendant here never made that complete and truthful disclosure.
Would it be good enough if he had said that I don't have any information other than what the government already has?
No, I don't think so, because the government would not know, he would not have disclosed what he himself knows. That's the requirement. He has to name names. If you look at Shrestha, it describes what the defendant is expected to tell the government. Here, the defendant admitted he knowingly joined a conspiracy, and he never named a single conspirator. So he can't claim that he made a complete and truthful disclosure.
He didn't provide any information?
That's correct. He provided no information beyond the very general allegations of statements in the plea agreement, which themselves don't name names. And this is basically a tell all you can tell, name the names. If we already had the names, that's fine. He would still get the safety valve. But he has to be willing to do that. That's why the cases talk about cooperation. That's why they sometimes characterize the complete and truthful disclosure requirement as a cooperation requirement. The defendant has to be willing to come in and say, whatever the facts are, I got them from Amaya's cell, Amaya handed them to name the third party, and the third party gave them to me. Whatever the facts are, he has to lay them out.
Or else he gets a mandatory five-year sentence.
Or else he gets the mandatory minimum. That's correct.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions.
Thank you. We thank you for your argument. The case of United States versus Martin Salazar is submitted.